Hello, and welcome to episode 149 of Ribbon of Memes, a podcast where we interrogate films previously described by other strangers to these lands as masterpieces. I am Nick, and as ever, I am joined by Roger.
Hello.
And once again, we're very lucky to be joined by the very philosopher of film herself, Marianne Johansson.
Hello.
Good to have you. Hello, Marianne. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And we are delving into horror this time because we are discussing 2019, Ari Aster's 2019 film, Midsommar. Is that how I say it? Midsommar?
Yep, I think so. Or Midsommar. Or
something like that.
Midsommar. So, I mean, the question here, not usual warning for spoilers, but is this the smart horror that we've all been waiting for? And I think we're going to agree on that.
Okay, well, no spoilers. So I was strongly recommended this film by someone at work who said it was a different type of horror film. You've never seen anything kind of like it before. So we'll discuss whether that's true or not. But there we are. Marianne, you had already reviewed this on your wonderful website, Flick Philosopher.
Yes, I saw it when it was new, which I can't believe that's 5 years ago now.
That's crazy.
Was not a fan, and I had not seen it again since I watched it last night.
Oh, and, interesting to see if it's blossomed.
And my reaction to it did not change. I still really dislike it on lots of levels.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to talk about. I think it's probably fair to say we all did. Is that fair, Roger?
Mm.
I can't say I'm a huge fan. Let's find out why.
You have just started listening to this episode, and you know the kettle's just boiled, or you need to put the cat out, or something, go and read Marianne's review, which I will link to in the show notes.
Which will probably do a much better job of discussing it than Roger or I will. So I was sold this year as an artsy, well, not really, but sort of arch intellectual kind of different kind of horror film.
And, well, yeah, so some fans of horror and some critics have sort of come up with this phrase elevated horror to describe movies like this one. I'm not sure that I agree with that. And it's also kind of an insult to other movies that aren't being labeled as elevated. But yeah, so this does definitely have the sheen of being a bit more artsy, a bit more serious.
It's not just putting a bunch of girls in bikinis in an isolated place and getting them murdered one at a time.
Exactly. It's not a slasher film.
Well, the opening of this film did blow me away, I have to say. So it starts with, she's a wonderful actor as well.
Florence Pugh. This was her breakthrough year. This was the same year as Fighting With My Family, where she basically plays the future pro wrestler Paige in a somewhat fictionalized, but it's kind of fun.
It's a great film. She's terrific. She's great in this film.
I mean,
and really the whole cast is good. It's a really good cast.
Yeah. Well, it's a really well made film. It's very pretty.
Yeah.
And I think pretty doesn't mean elevated to me.
No.
So it opens with her, worrying about her parents. Her sister and just trying to get in touch with her parents. And then it turns out that her sister, who has significant mental health problems, I think she's bipolar, is she? But she has mental health problems. And she has both killed her mum and dad and herself in kind of a mass suicide pact. But the reveal of it, I was really impressed by. It's not just explained. It's sort of
non-verbal.
You're given. Yeah, you see the emergency service coming into the house and finding it, and you sort of. I mean, it's obvious, but you piece it together yourself rather than being told what's happened, and just the horror of that.
I do very much like the camera work on this. Yeah,
I mean,
Aster is clearly a talented filmmaker. It's just in some of his other films too. Like, I'm not a huge fan of Hereditary. I'm not a fan of what he's saying with these films.
Okay, well, let's delve into that a bit. I just point out
Roger's fire safety corner. It's actually very hard to flood a house with carbon monoxide like that. But, yeah, not completely impossible.
Well, but we're not given a lot of time to think about it, really. We've just seen this kind of setup and the consequence, and then we're left with the aftermath. And, you know, Pugh's acting is just incredible. And then we're introduced to a boyfriend and his group of mates who very quickly reveal themselves to be a bunch of an entirely unlikable dickheads.
I feel like this movie makes me think of the Reddit subreddit, Am I the Asshole? half of the posts on there are from women describing, like, terrible, like, emotional, sometimes physical abuse from their partners, their male partners.
Right.
Like, real, like litanies of, like, what is going on here? And then saying, am I the asshole for asking him to be a little nicer to me?
Oh.
And that's, like, that's the dynamic between Florence Pugh's character and her boyfriend.
Yes.
Who's played by Jack Rayner, who also is a terrific actor, and he's very good at playing an asshole.
And sort of a realistic asshole who's not just a bad guy. He's a weak.
I mean, and it's also realistic that she is constantly apologizing to him for expecting him to be there when she needs emotional support, like when her entire family has died.
Yes.
So it's realistic, but it's also really frustrating to watch. And I don't think that Astor really does much interesting with it. He thinks he does.
Well, in a way, I would have liked to have seen that film that doesn't get sidetracked by a trip to Scandinavia. I forgot, is it Finland?
Sweden.
Sorry, I do apologize. I would have been interested in exploring that dynamic a bit because the actors are great and it's a realistic dynamic, I think.
It is.
And there are lots and lots of relationships like that all over the world. And I think it would help people in relationships like that to, you know, see it explored. But that's not the film we get.
Well, I'm a bit curious about this because I'm perhaps oversensitized to this, but pretty much the first scene that he's in, I thought, okay, this guy is not somebody I'm going to cheer for. And I'm wondering whether I would expect in a more conventionally paced film to make that gradually appear over the course of the film rather than, oh, up front, no, leave that guy, he's rubbish.
Mm. Well, I wonder if we're meant to sort of, like, it's hard to, you know, obviously we all had the same reaction that these are all assholes. I don't know if we're supposed to kind of like them a bit and so the ending of the film then becomes a shock, but we don't, so it doesn't really.
I couldn't help that line. What if I'm scaring him off? She says. Well, what if you found you'd lied about who you were in order to get him into a long-term relationship? Would that be okay?
I mean, she finds out a few weeks before he's about to go off for, is it like 3 weeks, 4 weeks, that he's about to go on holiday and hasn't mentioned it to her and hasn't invited her. And she's incredibly understanding about this. Like,
yep.
I'm not angry. Well, you've got a right to be angry.
It's not completely clear which bits of the film came from where, but as I understand it, the original proposal from Sweden was a fairly straightforward slasher film.
Right.
And so all that stuff at the beginning is from Astor.
Yeah. I don't know who Astor was in that relationship. But I will give him the benefit of the doubt and say, you know, he's exploring it from a, but then the film gets sidetracked because his Swedish friend has invited all his mates over for a lovely holiday, for a ritual that happens every 90 years at this commune in some part of Sweden.
And they are at least they're all something along the lines of anthropologists. They can claim academic interest as well as just having a good holiday.
At least two of them are doing some PhD on it, aren't they?
Yeah. And it is, they don't specify exactly where it is, but it's clearly quite far north because the sun, it's, you know, high summer, it's midsummer, so the sun doesn't set. So they have the midnight sun there,
or near the Arctic Circle or something.
Yeah, they're pretty far north. That is one of the unique things about this film is that you rarely see horror movies where everything takes place in daylight. Like literally the entire movie, once they go to Sweden, is in daylight.
Because there is no more nighttime.
Exactly. Yeah.
But that in itself,
it's a minor thing, but it is a thing. Yeah.
And it is, again, it's beautifully shot and direct and beautifully acted.
Mm-hmm.
But I found pretty quickly from this point, from the moment they arrived in Sweden, and certainly by the time they got to the commune, I could have I did predict almost exactly what was going to happen. It's just, I've seen this film before. You know, I've seen Straw Dogs. It's another one of those them other people there. They're not like us, and we don't like them. And it's the kind of
It's folk horror, having a bit of a revival, possibly because of this movie. There's been a lot of folk horror movies in the last few years. Mm. Some of them work better than others. I'm not sure that the folk horror here stuff mostly doesn't seem to be based on actual Scandinavian myths and legends for the most part, as far as I'm aware.
There are a couple of bits that are, and I'll mention that.
It's almost a bit cultural appropriation in that just uses the images. I mean, obviously the defining classic of folk horror is the Wicker Man remake with Nicolas Cage.
One day I may see it, but I may need more gin.
You'll need quite a bit, yes.
That's all right, I'll check. The Wicker Man is very good.
Certainly, I got repeated feelings here of, yes, you have seen The Wicker Man. Sadly, the remake has already been made and you don't get to do it.
It did kind of want to be, though. I mean, we've been going through the plot sort of blow by blow, but from this point on, it just becomes so predictable. It's pretty clear very quickly that this is a slightly weird group of kind of semi-pagan sect of some kind.
Weird subtype, welcoming and friendly, like a cult, as opposed to weird subtype, go away, we don't want your sort round here, but yeah.
Yes, it's not the surly Straw Dogs type, it's the initially friendly Wicker Man type. But it's there, and then, I mean, it's nicely done. I like the bit where Will Poulter's character, I would like to see Will Poulter.
Again, another terrific actor, and he's really good in this.
He's the classic, again, stereotypical, obnoxious American. You know, he's just that kind of blundering asshole who's just after women and what he can get out of this situation. And he pees on this sacred tree, which I thought was quite a nice scene. But you kind of see where it starts with a creepy kind of Seppuku kind of murder where these two elderly people fall off a cliff and one of them fails to hit the head on the sacred rock and so doesn't die. Well,
they don't fall, they jump. They're sacrificing themselves.
Yes, because they've reached the age of 72, which you predicted way earlier because there's a bit of dialogue where they're like, oh, ho, ho, and what happens when you get to 72, ho, ho, and everyone goes quiet and you think, oh, right, they all die at 72.
Well, actually, one of the friend character, the one who brings all of the American characters in, he sort of makes this chopping signal with his hand across his throat. We're meant to think it's a joke, but obviously it's true.
Yeah, but we don't.
And even then, I mean, this sort of sacrifice of the elderly people does bring up a sort of moral, ethical, debate about, how long do we, what is the difference between living a good life, a long life, and or just living, being alive and miserable in declining health. I'm not sure the film does not go into it all that much, but again, it's like another missed opportunity. Like there are all sorts of missed opportunities in this movie for a far more interesting exploration of the ideas it raises and then just discards.
Well, Edda Stupa is a genuine bit of folklore. It's a legend. And basically, like Atlantis, as it was originally written, it was, you're not expected to believe this, but, in this wonderful land over here, the people are so happy that they have to kill themselves, otherwise they would just live forever.
Okay. All right.
Just as Atlantis is actually contemporary political commentary, as Plato wrote it. But, it was not the sort of thing anybody ever took seriously. Until this film, as far as I can see.
Those few minutes are more discussion than the film gives it, This is just a creepy bit to creep you out. There's no suggestion of the West's obsession with, prolonging life over quality of life. It's just, this is horrible.
Let's have a close-up of the guy hitting the ground.
It's quite ironic because the Scandinavian countries, including Sweden, have some of the best elder care in the whole world, like really, take care of their elders, devote tax money to it and make sure that, people have a comfortable life no matter how long they live. So it's kind of ironic.
But then this isn't really, I could have been anywhere. I think that's slightly why I object to it. It doesn't have to be Sweden. It could have been anywhere. It's just, they pick Sweden, or it feels like, oh, that place is light all the time, so let's go there.
Well, I think the origin of the film, the slasher film aspect of it, was Swedish originally, and then they looked for American co-production.
But it's not really coloured by... Oh, exactly, as you point out, Maria, that is not a Swedish philosophy particularly. It's not any... I know it's a sect in it, and it's not supposed to, but it doesn't really feel...
I know Marianne's seen Bulgen, The Wave.
Yes.
A Norwegian disaster film, which is great. Terrific, by the really way. Good strongly film. Recommend it. But it's very much in the disaster film mould. It's done interestingly, but there is not an original concept in here. All the disaster film beats are being hit. They're just being done really well by a good director and good actors.
Right.
So, I mean, I suppose Hollywood culture and so on, but yeah.
I don't know what I'm complaining about, right? I just feel this feels a bit like a nondescript... eerie cult that you could have cut and pasted from anywhere else.
Absolutely true. With all of the nice sort of, in my review I talked about it just has this IKEA flavor to it. Like, IKEA is probably more Swedish or Scandinavian than this movie is, but it's just sort of this veneer of like, you know, oh, look at, you know, these cute folkloric designs and everyone's in their nice white linen dresses and stuff.
It's all very visual, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it sort of feel... The scene with the table where they're all sitting at the table, it's strikingly visual from overhead, but there's no concept that's meaningful in any way.
Exactly. Like there's no, like it looks pretty, but there's no real weight behind it. You don't believe it really because it doesn't feel authentic.
Time they go into the hand painted building, there's this Jurassic Park style scene. If we don't see the thing itself yet, we see them reacting and going, oh wow. But Jurassic Park followed that up with a shot about which the audience would legitimately go, oh, wow.
Yeah, they followed it up with a T-Rex. So. So they investigate the cult a bit more. I think after the peeing on the tree, Mark? Will Poulter's character, gets seduced by a young sexy cultist lady and... No, we never see him again. We never see all of him again. I think there's bits of him you see later. But you're not, at this point, I was in no way surprised that he's then been taken off and killed. You know, I just, you know.
Well, don't forget that in the grand tradition, the non-white people have died first.
Yes.
Oh, yes, that's true. Yes, the non-Americans and the non-white, but we never see the closest we get is, what's his face from, what's that thing? the good place.
William Harper Jackson or William Jackson Harper?
Yes, that's it. Who is also incredible. I love him in The Good Place. In fact, The Good Place is fantastic. It should be watched. And he's very good here and he gets clubbed over the head by, I think, a man wearing Mark's face. Is that right? That's what I read on the Wikipedia summary. I have to say, I did not notice that at the time in the film.
The fact that the non-white people are killed first seems like a matter of expedience for this cult, because the implication seems to be that one of the reasons that they brought in all these young men from outside was to get a little bit of fresh, you know, genetic material into the cult. In fact, the Poulter character talks to one of the older men in the cult when they first arrive, and he asks about, like, is incest a thing here, you know, small communities and all that. And then, of course, he's seduced and then he disappears. And then the same thing happens with Jack Rayner's character, the horrible boyfriend. He also contributes some genetic material to the to the community.
Well, that's a disturbing scene. I mean, that's a... kind of a rape scene, isn't it, as far as I can tell?
There's an element of coercion on, you know, the Jack Rayner character is being coerced in some ways.
Mm. Yeah. It's supposed to be a disturbing scene, so I guess it works well there. We don't see a lot of, I guess, male rape, which is, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but that is a thing that we have on this film. But we mostly, actually, for most of the time, we've been sticking with Florence Pugh's character, Danny, and just seeing her sort of go from aimless to being sort of semi-seduced by, oh, I've forgotten, dear me, Pelle.
Yeah.
Being semi-seduced, and we see this, I suppose we could charitably say we've seen the slow disintegration of her relationship with, goodness me.
Christian.
Of Jet Rennie, of Christian. Of her relationship with Christian. But.
Well, I think we're also getting her mental health coming apart. I mean, she's got past the initial, this is the worst thing that could possibly happen, and she's trying to move on with her life. But clearly she has more coping with it to do.
Mm.
And in character, nobody around her has the slightest interest in helping her with that.
Yeah,
or even noticing. Pelle is shown to be more sympathetic.
I think there's a sense too that she's suddenly surrounded by women, and she gets a little bit of sympathy in some aspects, especially when she really learns that her relationship is breaking down. They seem to support her in her pain. Right. The movie really fetishizes her pain, I think. But yeah, it's interesting because she, before they come to Sweden, the bits wherever they're supposed to be, Minneapolis or somewhere cold and dark and snowy.
Yeah, yes. The opposite of Sweden.
Yeah, we see no indication that she has any other friends apart from her boyfriend, which is really unusual. Most women have a couple of close friends that they would turn, female friends that they would turn to when things get really tough. And male filmmakers get this all the time. They don't understand women's relationship with other women. And
yeah,
they seem
she phones...
So it's gone. It's like she just doesn't seem to have that. And then she gets a little bit of support from these women. So that's part of her seduction, I think, in the community.
Mm. It's possible he's been such a controlling boyfriend that he's got rid of all that. But he doesn't really give that kind of impression of being controlling. He's just pathetic.
Much more whatever leads to the least effort on my part.
Mm. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. There is a bit at the beginning. She's just found out about her sister and parents dying, and she's just sitting there going, no, 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 which, yeah, okay, entirely reasonable. But the way it is shot, and particularly with respect to what happens later in the film, I went back to that thinking, yeah, you're really inviting the audience to indulge in this, aren't you?
Yes. In a way that we just don't see with any of the male characters, particularly.
Exactly, yeah.
The thing I've met with people who've had that kind of major trauma is that they don't just sit and rock. I mean, yes, they do a bit, but they also say, oh, you know, I should have done X, I should have done Y, what could I have done differently? And we don't see that at all. We don't see any of her actually processing it.
In fact, much of the rest of the film is watching her, dealing with it and being sad about it and breaking down. And there's long shots, like there's the whole sequence in the field where she... it basically goes on a bad trip, hallucinating about her parents. In a way that we never get inside the heads. But
there's
as you say, it's not really an understanding look. It feels a bit more voyeuristic. Mm. Look at this sad woman.
Pretty young woman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wouldn't you like to comfort her?
Now, if you are John Carpenter and you employ the best young actor of your generation as your lead, you get Halloween, which, okay, we disagreed on. I think it has a lot more points than Nick does. But if you're Ari Aster, you get this. There's a bit shortly after they've arrived where she's having that bad trip and she runs into a hut and something scares her to the extent that she falls unconscious. Did we ever actually find out what that was? I didn't.
No,
I couldn't believe
that.
No, you're right. We didn't. Mm.
The implication, she sees something, there's a mirror in the hut, and she's looking at herself in the mirror, and she sees a figure behind her, turns around, and there's nobody there. But there's never any follow-on with that.
Mm.
So it's basically just a jump scare, creep-out
thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Good job, Barry. although we've talked about what happens to the men, the story is really about Florence Pugh's character deteriorating. But she's very... to be honest, she follows an entirely passive path, it feels to me, throughout most of the film until the very last scene where she makes a decision that is pretty unsurprising at the end of it. And so I'm not sure. I suppose you could argue, is it her journey to empowerment? Has she found a strange kind of empowerment amongst this cult of creepy, murderous weirdos? Is that what we're... So the idea, basically, they've murdered everyone. They have to sacrifice 9 people, 4 of whom come from their midst, 4 of whom they've already done because they were nasty foreigners. And then one, she becomes the May queen, and at that point you knew either she's going to get killed at the end or her boyfriend is, and it was a boyfriend because she chooses him over a random cultist.
Yeah, so I think we have an important message about male-female relationships here. You know, women, they catch you having a harmless screw, and next thing you know, they're burning you alive.
I mean, I suspect Harry Astor thinks that, you know, Christian is getting his comeuppance and that he's made some sort of commentary here about kind of the, you know, the opposite of what you're saying, Roger, is that, yeah, you should be nicer, you know, because look, you know, don't be a jerk. But I don't think it works, partly because, as you say, Nick, she's so passive a character. Like, stuff happens to her. She makes very few decisions on her own that change the course of her life.
Yeah.
Or that change the course of her healing until that one tiny little decision at the end, which kind of has been half made for her already.
I know, it's not a surprise, is it? And and that also, that decision is based on this fact that he has had sex with one of the cultists under this weird drug-induced haze.
I have to say, and her reaction to that, I mean, of course she's, you know, anybody would be upset, but she goes way overboard. The way she, her reaction is a bit extreme, I think.
There's no attempt. Yeah, it's considering her reaction to her whole family being destroyed.
Right, it's on the same level as her learning that her entire family has died.
Yeah.
Which, but are those things really equal? I don't think so. What she already knows about this guy, that he's a real jerk.
Yeah, she's already been told. I mean, you'd think it would instill some kind of anger or something, but it's more kind of more passive, oh, another bad thing has happened.
Yeah, exactly.
She is she's a very watchable actress, and I mean that not just because she's young and pretty, but because she's very good. In fact, everyone is, as you say, in this whole film.
Oh, she did the remarkable thing in her career after this of doing MCU, but not doing only MCU, which is apparently quite hard.
Oh, is she in MCU as well?
Yeah, I lose track.
Stop watching like everyone else.
Yeah, but a lot of people, they get a major role, and that's basically all they do, because they're turning out one or two films a year on that and getting paid an awful lot. But she has managed to keep doing other things as well, so that's great.
I think, I mean, as an actor, that's a pretty unforgiving and hard role for her to play, this one, I think. And it's a shame for her, because she puts in a great performance, that it's not, no fault there, it's just not really a convincing story. Or if it is, if, you know, I do believe, you know, in the context of the story, that she goes to that and she makes that decision, but I'm left with a feeling of, all right, well, okay. So what? It's not a surprise to me. It's not like the horror kind of the Wicker Man on the Hill, or God, oh, Christ. It's just, oh, well, that was going to happen, wasn't it? Entirely underwhelming. I mean, I watched this film at quite high speed, in a lunch break, and I still predicted what was going to happen at the end of it.
Yeah, it's 2.5 hours as released, 2:50 in the director's cut. Yes, of course, there's a director's cut. And honestly, I don't think it has to be.
Definitely not.
There's a lot that could be compressed or removed.
Yeah, yeah. It drags in a lot of ways. And that would be, you know, length isn't the problem. It's what you do with it. And
exactly. Well, we watched The Blair Witch not so long ago, which was, it's a fairly short film, but it's so repetitive, it feels much longer. but similarly, we've watched films, what was it? Pianist is like 2.5 hours long, but it does not feel like that. It just pulls you through it.
Yeah.
I would like to step in and talk about folklore a bit, because I'm not an expert in Scandinavian folklore. But a thing struck me. There's this little scene. It's only about 30 seconds or so, but basically they're coming into the commune, and one of them, who is regarded as, you know, he's one of the anthropologists, sees a runestone. And okay, runestones. These are a genuine thing. They are all documented. There is a database. If I remember, I'll link it in the show notes. Every runestone is, it's been documented, it's been photographed. So this guy should be either saying, I wanted to look at this one because it's remote and people don't get to look at it very often. Or he should be saying, oh wow, here's an undocumented runestone.
Yeah, but I wonder where it came. Yeah, I've never seen before.
But no, he's just, oh right, it's a runestone.
He might just be a rubbish student.
That could be true, or there just isn't a real authentic feeling use of the folklore. I mean, things like maypoles and May Queen, those are more for spring, not summer.
Well, I think you hit it on the head there, Miriam. Apologies to the in poor taste, considering it's when you said it's like got this IKEA feel to it, or it's all a veneer. It's very much like an IKEA desk in that it's a veneer over the top of some pretty shoddy
pressboard
stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very pretty. I think what irritates me more about the film, he didn't want to do just a slasher, but what he did was just we are from the city, and what I was worried about in all these folks in the deep dark woods is exactly true. They are murderous lunatics. And that plot's been done a lot of times before, very tackily, very well. And putting a veneer of artistry over the top of it doesn't make it any cleverer. Or it doesn't give you anything new to say. And it doesn't say anything, add anything to this genre. It doesn't, as you say, there's a number of themes it touches on, relationships, death, our relationship with the elderly, and doesn't explore any of them in any meaningful way whatsoever.
It doesn't seem to have a point of view, really. Films don't have to bang you over the head with, again, pardon the pun, with a message or anything, but you want to feel like there is an impetus behind making it. Like, what drove Astor to make this? Like, what did he think he was saying? And I just don't know.
I think that's, some of our favourite, Roger and I, are just what we want is for the audience to have a good time, which is, fine. I'm very happy with that, like Jaws.
Me too.
There's no
I didn't have a good time with this one.
Exactly, but if you're kind
Jaws is also saying overreaction and solving the wrong problem and things like that. That's sitting there in the background for you to look at when you get bored.
Yeah. Touch on them and don't quite explore them, but say acknowledge, nod in the direction of, and this is a thing. But here, I don't know. I guess that what that brings around to, then what are we supposed to be enjoying? Because it's not a frightening film. I've never enjoyed gore particularly in horror, and it's gory in that kind of realistic anatomical way, but it doesn't really do much for me on any level.
Well, yeah, some people are into horror films because they like inventive kills.
Yes.
That doesn't do anything for me, but I appreciate that some people do like that, but there's nothing like that in this.
Well, go watch Final Destination then.
Oh, I've seen those.
They're the ones that are like, oh, I wonder how the person in this scene is going to die. That's exciting.
Yeah, yeah. Or I've never seen somebody murdered quite that way before.
I can see the thrill in that, but that's not here either. So ultimately, what are we enjoying watching a young woman suffering her way through 2 hours of film?
The overwhelming feeling that I got from it, is that we're supposed to be somehow enjoying her pain. And it's almost pornographic. Partly because she is such a good actress. Hmm. If she wasn't as good as conveying the pain that she's suffering, that aspect wouldn't be there.
It becomes gratuitous, doesn't it? Because we know she's suffering, and we don't need as much of it as we get. And so there comes a point where you're like, well, the men were suffering here too. In fact, they died, but we never get anything from their perspective at all.
No.
We just focused on the suffering of this, which could mean, are we more sympathetic towards them? But that's not really how it feels, is it? I mean, it feels gratuitous suffering.
There's also a thing which I think The Wicker Man did very well, and I have no idea whether the remake touches on this, but certainly it doesn't seem to be here, and I think it would be a better film if it were here. In The Wicker Man, they are basically after an innocent sacrifice. But he has to be a volunteer, and they give him lots of opportunities to not volunteer. Either there's not really a problem here, you can go away, or you can become not innocent. He only gets to the end he does because he sticks to that. He is true to himself, and that turns out to be exactly the wrong thing to do.
Well, the essence of a great tragedy is, you can see the train coming, you desperately want your character to get out of the way, and there's lots of opportunities for them to do, but then the train hits them at the end of the film.
Have a reason for not doing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't feel there's any parallel to that here, and it would have been much better if there had been.
Yeah.
It's not really a tragedy in that sense, because you could see the kind of end these people were going to come to, but...
All the assholes are dead and she's the May Queen. Obviously, it's a happy ending.
Yeah, right. I mean, as well as the folklore is not authentic, it's not emotionally or psychologically authentic.
I think that's
you can forgive a lot of stuff in a film if you believe what the characters are doing and why they're doing it.
Yeah.
But when you don't have that, then it becomes really easy to start picking it all apart.
It all feels a bit...
contrived is the word.
Like right at the end when she's crying because he's and then she smiles. Are we supposed to be like, oh my god, I can't believe it? She's actually, well, I know. Yeah. It just surprised me in some way because I knew that was going to happen.
Right. Obviously, all storytelling is contrived by its very definition, but it shouldn't feel contrived.
Well, exactly. We're all on the rails. We just don't like to feel we're on the rails. Don't we?
Yeah.
And similarly, I don't mind being preached to as long as I don't notice it. But there's not really any preaching going on here anyway. I think what irritates me is that phrase, elevated horror. It's not, it's just a B-movie, this thing, really.
It's just it's a very pretty, well-acted B-movie.
Yeah.
And it's very long. With a decent budget.
And very long, yeah.
And it's a bit like, you know, when your teacher says, I expect a better of you. They're clearly a very talented director, very talented cinematographer. With nothing to say.
Yeah.
The things have all been said before.
It's pretty and empty.
But it made a reasonable amount of money, so...
Well done. Well done, Ari Aster. Apparently he's made a long film now with Joaquin Phoenix, I think.
Is that Beau's Afraid?
Yes.
Oh, I haven't seen that one yet.
Nor
it's 4 hours long, though.
Oh, goodness.
I might not go for that one. And so is Hereditary, did that give you a similar... vibe, Marianne?
Yes, very much so. Yeah, I'm also not a huge fan of Hereditary, but I like it a bit more than I like this one. Mm-hmm. Again, incredibly well acted. Definitely has some creepy vibe to it. But again, it like doesn't quite work.
it feels...
Yeah, but also I am in the minority on that as well. I mean, so many film fans and other critics seem to think he is an absolute genius.
Well, I was surprised reading the reviews, but I just got the feeling it feels it's cleverer than it is, and that's an irritating feeling when you're watching a film.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Well, we are all in agreement, I'm afraid. Midsommar is not to be confused with Midsommar, which is another film from about 20 years before.
Well, I just will say Midsommar is a genuine festival in most of Scandinavia for obvious reasons.
Mm.
In towns, it's generally we'll get together and drink in the park, that kind of thing. But yeah, if there's a music festival, it may well happen then, that kind of thing.
Which is reminding, I don't know, randomly, when we're supposed to be horrified at the end when he's being burned to death, he's stuffed inside a bear. It just looks stupid. But there we are. Maybe that was me, but it looks like there's a fire on the set of Rainbow. Anyway.
I definitely felt worse for the bear than I did for him.
Yes.
The poor creature didn't ask for anything. Sure, he was a really nice bear.
He was a very sweet bear. No, actually that bear was an asshole. Well, there we are. Thank you, Ari Aster. Thank you, Marianne, for joining us to eviscerate Midsommar.
We didn't set out to do this, but it became clear that it was what was going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, not only is it kind of empty, it's also disturbing in what it thinks we want to be watching. Yeah. So, not for us. All right. Well, there we are. Better luck next time, Ari. We'll try again. Well, I don't know if I will try again. There are plenty of other films to go for.
Oh, well.
Well, there we are.
While you're here, just come into this hut. It's perfectly safe.
Wait, let me just dump my girlfriend first.
Right. So I will say there is a really good folk horror movie that's out now called Starve Acre with Matt Smith.
And the woman
who is in The Rings of Power, whose name I can't remember. She's a Welsh actress. But that is extremely... I mean, it's mostly all vibes, but... It is extremely creepy vibes, and I don't know how authentic the folklore in it is, but it feels authentic. It feels like it has this weight of history and, you know, behind it, it's in cinemas at the moment, but I'm sure it'll be on streaming soon.
Oh, well, there we go.
Yeah. We might look at that for a future episode, maybe.